Welcome to Virginia Focus. I'm John Clark on the Virginia News Network. The Virginia Department of Historic Resources is the state historic preservation office. Their mission is to foster, encourage, and support the stewardship of Virginia's significant historical, architectural, archaeological, and cultural resources. On today's program, we'll be discussing their work with Julie Langan. She is director of the Virginia Department of Historic Resources, Elizabeth Toon, who is director of DHR's Preservation Incentives Division, and James Hare, director of DHR's Survey and Register Division. Director Langan, give us an idea of your overall mission at the Department of Historic Resources.
Well, we are a state agency, and our mission is to preserve historic resources of a wide variety, including buildings, structures, objects, historic districts. And we do that by partnering with other state agencies, federal agencies, local communities, private property owners. So we really work with anyone who owns or is stewarding historic property.
You know, you would think, I guess, after all these years, Virginia has such a long, rich history and was so important in the birth of our nation. You would think you'd discovered all those places so far, but are you finding that there's still many to be discovered yet?
I think a lot of people have the same thought that you just expressed, that surely by now we've identified all the historic properties, and nothing could be further from the truth. When I think of our mission, I really think of it as having three core components, and the first of those is identifying historic resources. We have records now on 250,000, but we know that's really just a drop in the bucket, and especially when it comes to archaeological resources, which are hard to see because they're buried, we have a long way to go.
Is it an issue, too, of you're in a race against time because of, you know, growth and expansion, and you don't want to lose some of these places because of that? You have to maintain, you have to grow, but you also have to maintain the historic value of them, too. It's a balance, I would imagine.
Well, it's a balance, and you're right about a race against time. I think we all feel a sense of urgency, especially with certain types of historic properties. And we have been doing studies of the impacts of sea level rise on historic resources, both buildings and archaeological sites. And especially in coastal Virginia, we do feel like we're racing the clock to try to document some of these places before water gets the better of them.
Talk more about I know you have a division of archaeology. Discuss their work. Sounds like they're a pretty busy department.
Well, they are. That division is tasked with a couple of main responsibilities. One of them, of course, is going out and documenting archaeological sites, and then we also are custodians of artifacts. We have a collection of artifacts that have come to us from all over the state from a variety of sources, and we think we have about 7 million artifacts. So we have to manage those, curate those, and we love to loan them out so that they can be exhibited around the state.
I was going to say, where do you store those? Where do you store that many?
We have like a warehouse facility with compact storage, and we're about 3 to 4 years away from running out of space. And we're taking in new artifacts all the time. And so eventually we're going to have to be expanding our capacity to store these artifacts.
That's got to be interesting to walk through there and just see and know what's all in there. It's just phenomenal, I would think.
Well, even more interesting is going into the conservation lab, because we do have such a lab with a conservator who stabilizes artifacts. And you can just walk in there on any given day, and there are all sorts of interesting things that she's working on. It might be some sort of metal piece that's been found, or it could be human remains. It really runs the gamut.
Never the same place twice, is it?
No, no.
How does it work on the archaeology part of it? If someone finds something, do you have to stop what's going on and then do an archaeological dig? Is that pretty much how it works.
Well, that sounds like a simple question. It has a complicated answer. It all depends. It depends on whose property it is and who's doing the work that relates to this find. So it's not a yes or no situation. There aren't any laws or regulations that really govern what happens on private property unless there's some sort of a federal unless there's a federal involvement. The exception to that is if human remains are uncovered, and then you are supposed to immediately stop work.
Do you have, I'm sure you have ongoing archaeological projects at any given time, like right now probably?
Yes, although we're nearing the end of the season. Now that, you know, we're into the fall season, we've just a week ago closed up a site that we've done extensive work at on the Eastern Shore. And we're getting into that time of year where we do a lot of processing of what's been found out in the field during better weather.
You mentioned a moment ago about the beaches and the beach erosion, and you're sort of in a race against time against that. Expand on that some.
Well, we know because we've done predictive modeling that some of the terrestrial sites that we know about are going to be underwater, and we can even give you an estimate of how long it's going to take before that happens. So we've spent a lot of time on the Eastern Shore and looking at some of the coastal areas to prioritize where we invest our time and resources in documenting historic sites.
It takes a lot of people. How many people approximately work in your department?
Not nearly enough.
Sounds like it.
We have about 46 full-time employees, and then we depend heavily on part-time people.
Yeah. And I would imagine there you have people in all types of areas of expertise, very well, certainly have a wonderful knowledge of history, and they know what they're looking for.
Well, we have a very, I would say, highly educated staff, most of whom have masters, if not PhDs, in their given subject. We have people who meet federal requirements as far as credentials. So we've got architectural historians, architects, archaeologists, historians, very passionate, very dedicated staff who love what they do.
Do you coordinate with surrounding states if it's needed, if something is, you have something in common, and maybe a certain part of history that's in common, does that help you at all?
That's a really great question. Not as much as you might think. Hmm. We share methodology. We're in touch with one another. There are, online discussions that take place on a regular basis. So we're often aware of what our neighbors are doing, but I would say that's the extent of it.
James, we have James here with us. He's director of DHR Survey and Registry Division. James, talk about the historical marker program. That, Virginia is the oldest state to have such a program. Do you know how many there are?
Well, we know we have over 2,600.
Okay.
We just added two more this past week in Pulaski County. So the volume goes up about 40 markers a year. And you're right, this is the oldest program in the country. It goes back to 1927. And you think that the program might not be very vibrant anymore, but you'd be surprised at how attached Virginians are to the program. And
Days
go by if a marker is damaged or goes missing somehow that we don't hear right away about it, because the markers have become an important part of Virginia's landscape for many people for many, many, many years. Just last week, I was talking about two new markers that went up to commemorate activities relating to World War II, and it made me pause to think that the people we were talking about in those markers maybe left in 1941-42 to go off to war and passed by markers about Virginia's history and may not have realized that they were on their way to make history themselves. So it's an interesting program, and we're at the point where we want to make it more accessible. So we've been working to make digital recordings of each of our markers so that you can have them read to you by your cell phone, essentially, as you drive by. And that program's got a lot of interest. So far, we have two major routes that have these audio tours associated with them. One is the Capital Bike Trail between Richmond and Virginia along Route 5, and that covers history from just about every aspect of Virginia's past, so it's fascinating. But we also recently completed recording all of the markers within a 10-mile buffer along I-95 from the North Carolina border all the way through Washington, D.C. So that makes those markers, many of which are on small byways or roads that you wouldn't travel regularly, accessible to the huge volume of people that are traveling up and down I-95 every day. Our plans are to expand that program to try to do a similar project along all the major interstates. But we also are focusing in on the scenic byways and the historical byways we have in the Commonwealth. For instance, we will be recording all of the markers associated with the Crooked Road out in the western part of the state, which is that 700-mile loop that is highly focused on the contribution Virginia's made to the music scene, country music and such.
You know, that's fascinating now that you can do that. Talk about the process. I guess because you're riding down the road and you otherwise wouldn't know that something historical happened there. But you have to stop and read it. So how does this work? What is the technology involved in this?
You know, the technology has come along to the point that we didn't have to look too far to find a tool to work with. There's an app called izi.travel.com. And that's the content management platform we've used to do our tours so far. It's free, it's easy to download, it's easy to use. The big part of the job is to get the digital recordings made. And you can imagine to get 2,600 recordings made is quite a job. We've been very successful working with drama students from College of William & Mary to help us do that work. But what we would really like to do is capture Virginia voices throughout the Commonwealth in helping us do that. And we put together a program to work, hopefully, with middle or high school age students, maybe even older, younger or older students, to have them record the marker texts for us. We just announced a project to work with Pulaski County's County Library to spearhead a program to record all Pulaski County's markers using their students. So we're going to see how that goes in this first round, and then hopefully we'll have a program that gets rolled out so that all of the Commonwealth counties are involved in this program.
You mentioned that you just erected a couple of markers here recently. What is the process for that? Take us through from the idea until the marker gets placed.
Sure. You might think that the markers are paid for by the state, which is not the case. That's the way it originally was, but the state hasn't been able to afford to do that for a long, long time now. So we rely on communities or organizations or even individuals out there who want to propose a marker and are willing to pay for it. And the cost is was generally around $1,700. So it's no small affair. But what happens is we have an application form on our website, dhr.gov, that you can download. It walks you through the process, tells you what kind of information to look for, what types of documentation we need to have. We only recognize topics of Virginia history that have at least a statewide level of significance. And that means we sometimes have to tell people that their topic isn't very interesting. But it really just means that we find all history interesting. So that's not
sure.
It's just that the way the program is constructed, it has to be of statewide significance. And we have a PhD historian on staff that works with members of the public to craft their initial statement about the topic into something that covers the entire topic in a very brief 100 to 107 word paragraph. The process is such that she presents that crafted document to an editorial committee, and then once every 3 months we have a meeting of our historic resources board, And there, that's the body that is actually empowered to approve the marker for erection. And at that point, it goes out to VDOT, our partner in the program since 1927, who will erect the marker and work with us and the public to find a safe place for the marker to be erected.
So you're always, I guess there's always a marker somewhere along the stage. You're constantly funneling them through the system then.
Yes, new markers as well as existing markers that have been out there for almost 90 years that were either so tersely worded back in 1927 when people traveled very slowly, and just don't convey much information. We have the ability to convey a lot more now, and we try to bring markers up to a standard where they are meeting that public education purpose.
Virginia, of course, has a lot of landmarks on the National Registry of Historic Places and the Virginia Landmarks Register. Talk about those registers and how do you get on there, and discuss that whole program.
Sure. The first thing I'd like to say is that, you know, these programs are honorary.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people are under the impression that if you go onto the register, your property gets listed, all of a sudden you're facing a lot of restrictions on your use of that property. And nothing could be further from the truth. The program, as I said, is honorary. It doesn't restrict how you use your property, what color you have to paint it, things like that. You can tear it down. The only recourse that we have is to then take it off the list because it no longer exists.
Mm-hmm.
So people are a little hesitant sometimes when they hear about that. I want to just remind your listeners that that's not the case. Now, having said that, we have a lot of people come forward all the time with properties they want to get on the register because they want it recognized. And that means they have to work with us to prepare a document that's fairly long and delves into the history and looks at the property to ascertain its eligibility to meet one of a number of criteria of significance that were established by the National Park Service, which is our federal partner in managing the program. So once that work is done, the nomination will go before both of the boards in the State Review Board and the Board of Historic Resources, for approval at the quarterly meetings we hold, where the highway markers are always also approved. And once that happens, it is automatically placed then on the Virginia Landmarks Register, which is actually a little older than the National Register of Historic Places. But at that point, it gets forwarded to the keeper of the National Register, and they go through their review, and if they agree with the recommendation our board has made, it will then get listed on the register.
Yeah, that's interesting. Automatically, I mean, I would think that once you're on the register, you have certain rules to follow, and so it's interesting that you say that. You certainly cleared up some misconceptions for me and listeners as well, for sure.
If I may, I'd like to jump in and add to what Jim said, that just to brag a little bit, we recently learned that we were number two in the country for the number of listings on the register last year. And that speaks to the hard work of Jim and his staff, because the process is involved and the work is pretty significant to nominate successfully a property. So we're really proud of that.
It sounds like a monumental task, keeping up with everything you guys do. I said before, you're very busy. How do you deal with, compliance issues to make sure that, these places aren't, being destroyed or being damaged in any way? How do you keep that all straight?
We really rely on people who are outside of our Richmond sphere of, observation. And we have some staff in offices in Salem and Stevens City, so they can be the eyes and ears on the ground in those regions, but we rely on the general public as well.
Today we're talking about the work of the Virginia Department of Historic Resources. Our guests are Julie Langan, she is director of the DHR, Elizabeth Toon, who is director of their Preservation Incentives Division, and James Hare, director of DHR's Survey and Register Division. Elizabeth, talk about what your division does as far as tax credits and easement programs and so forth.
The easements and the tax credits are programs that are largely precipitated on the listing of the properties in the Virginia Landmarks Register. So the work that Jim and his division do is absolutely critical to establishing historic significance and what about those properties makes them special. When you're in or listed in a registry, that opens you up to participating in these voluntary programs. To me, they're kind of, I put it as the tortoise and the hare. The tortoise being the easement program. Mm. We work with our Board of Historic Resources, who holds easements. These are perpetual easements, thus the tortoise. They hold easements that restrict the use and development of the property to make sure that as changes are proposed and accomplished on a property, that any changes are really compatible with the historic character, that they don't destroy important facets of the history, be it a historic building, an archaeological site, a battlefield landscape, and so forth. So there's a process, and we work with the property owners of the easement properties to steward their properties. And we really see ourselves as a partner in that very long-term proposition, helping a property owner understand, again, what's important and really how to deal with the resources, because historic buildings, sites, landscapes, can be challenging to know how to maintain them, much less how they can be, you know, altered appropriately for the future. And again, that's generally a voluntary program. Somebody is just interested in preserving the historic character of their property, and they work with us on developing this agreement. In other cases, we will get an easement that is the requirement of some grant funding that has been either provided by the state or in some cases the federal government for the preservation of the property. And then the hare, no offense, Jim, is the Rehabilitation Tax Credit Program. And that is a program, again, it's a voluntary participation where we work with a property owner who wants to redevelop, rehabilitate their property. In many cases, this is an adaptive reuse, taking a property that hasn't been, you know, realizing its potential. Sometimes it's been vacant for a number of years, and we work with that property owner to accomplish their use, often a new use, in a way that's compatible with historic preservation standards and guidelines. In Virginia, we have a very robust state program that really allows pretty much any owner of historic properties to participate. So this is everything from homeowners, schools, churches, nonprofit organizations, as well as commercial developers. There is a federal program that is our program was based on. The federal program is unfortunately a little more narrow and is really only open for income-producing properties. But the two credits can be used together. The state credit is equal to 25% of your investment dollars. And again, it's a tax credit, so it is applied directly against income tax liability. So it has been a very popular program throughout Virginia. It was instituted in 1997, so we've got a little over 20 years of working with property owners throughout the Commonwealth and really seeing some pretty profound changes throughout Virginia's communities, from big cities to smaller communities, and it's really been a catalyst, you know, that spark that can change an area for the good.
Well, that can really revive, we were talking about earlier, the race against time, and that can certainly slow it down by reviving communities and downtowns and neighborhoods, and certainly in some of the smaller towns, making them more viable. Is that correct?
Absolutely. It's sort of the perfect nexus between historic preservation and economic development, you know, ultimately leading, we hope, to more sustainable communities.
And how can somebody find out about those programs if they have property and they want to get involved with it?
Well, they can. We have some information on our website. They can always contact me and my staff, and we work with property owners, you know, from the, you know, first glint of an idea, the question of, you know, does my property qualify? Is it on the Virginia Landmarks Register? We can work with them to ascertain whether it is or not, and then work with them on developing plans that meet the preservation guidelines.
And I'll throw this out to all of you. If someone does have a piece of property, It has to be verified, I would imagine. They can't say, you know, this is part of a Civil War battlefield. You really have to do some research to verify it. Is that sort of step one? We have to make sure this is legitimate.
Yes, and that's not always hard to do. Sometimes it is, and in other cases, it's pretty straightforward. And the example that you offered, a Civil War battlefield, we have good mapping and boundaries for battlefields, and so that's generally a pretty easy question to answer.
What about the economic impact of these historic places around the state that certainly have tourism coming in there? How does that impact the state's economy?
Well, it's a linchpin in the state's economy, and I think sometimes people overlook it. Elizabeth spoke to the fact that there's a very direct link between the tax credit program and economic development. There, and that's because it incentivizes private investment. There's also a direct link between tourism and historic preservation. And the studies that have been done have demonstrated that more visitors come to Virginia to see historic sites than they do to see other types of attractions. And you may have seen recently that Virginia is experiencing an uptick in the number of international travelers coming here. They too like to see the historic sites. So all of the work that we do, we would argue that all of our programs really support economic development in a state like Virginia, where there's such a wealth of historic property.
Yeah, there really is. It's amazing. It's in every nook and cranny of the state. It's just the wealth of history there. Now, you have some regional preservation offices. Discuss those. Does each have a certain area that they have some expertise in, or they all sort of work together?
Well, they each have an archaeologist and an architectural historian. We once had a system of four offices, and we're down now to three, having lost one to budget cuts. And we actually would love nothing more than to add another office in the far southwest part of Virginia, because that's so remote and takes so much time to travel to and from. But they do a lot of the work directly with property owners and communities that are interested in identifying historic resources and then evaluating them to figure out which are most historically significant. It's a big part of what we do, making a judgment about why a property is significant and prioritizing its importance, because not all historic properties are equally important. Some have associations with things on a national stage. Some properties are more locally important, and so we're always making those kinds of determinations, and our regional offices really helped with that.
Well, at the beginning of our discussion today, you did mention that there are many places yet to be discovered in Virginia. There's never a shortage of those. So if someone feels they have a place of historic significance, what steps should they take to get in touch with you and to start the ball rolling and find out exactly what they have?
Well, I would suggest that they first visit our website, which I'm proud of. I think it's a really good, informative website. Someone can go there and find out if we have a record of their property by using the public portal to VCRIS, which is the acronym for Virginia Cultural Resource Information System. They might find that we have a record and we might have information that they don't. They can also find out if their property is on the Virginia or National Register. But then there's also a staff directory with contacts for every program.
Well, I thank you all for taking time to talk. You're doing great work. You're doing vital work for Virginia. And certainly, you know, history, once we lose it, we can't get it back, some of these artifacts. So I appreciate y'all taking time today to talk to us about what you do.
Well, thank you. It's been a pleasure.
And on today's program, we've been discussing the work of the Virginia Department of Historic Resources. Our guests have been Julie Langan. She is director of the Virginia Department of Historic Resources, Elizabeth Toon, director of DHR's Preservation Incentives Division, and James Hare, director of DHR's Survey and Register Division. We thank them for being our guests today. You can find out more about their work at dhr.virginia.gov. Thanks for listening. I'll talk to you next week here on Virginia Focus.